Laying of Treasure by Robert C. Newman. Jesus commands us to lay up treasure in heaven. How can we tell down here how we're doing up there? We consider the contrast between the world system of rewards and God's system. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21, Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." How are we doing? Jesus commands us to lay up treasure in heaven, but while we're here on earth, we can't see our treasures in heaven. So how can we tell how we're doing? It's easy for us to be mistaken. We are likely to be influenced by the world system of rewards, but it won't be the world giving out their rewards. Let's look a little bit at the world system of reward. The world tends to reward ability. It reminds me of a story heard that late in his career, Pablo Picasso, living in retirement, I believe, in Cuba, never had to spend any money. Whenever he bought anything, he would write a check for it. And people thought that Picasso's signature was so valuable, they would never cash the checks. That's certainly a reward for ability. The world tends to reward results also. You produce, you get paid. Now, put tens on both of these, because we know that there's a corruption of many sorts in the world, and so it's not always ability and results that get rewarded. But there's certainly a tendency that way. Those with greater ability have a great advantage. Though Ecclesiastes 9:11 indicates that ability does not guarantee results. Ecclesiastes 9:11, the preacher says, "I have seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned, but time and chance happen to them all." Solomon is not here saying that the fastest guy never wins the race, or the strongest guy never wins the battle. What he's saying is the fastest guy doesn't always win the race. The strongest guy doesn't always win the battle. But time and chance happen to them all. Things that couldn't be predicted, and the fast runner stumbles or something, or the strong fellow gets hit by an arrow that goes through his a chink in his armor or something of that sort. So the world system of reward, the world tends to reward ability, the world tends to reward results. And the world rewards the things that the world values. For example, large salaries go to entertainment and sports celebrities rather than, say, humanitarian workers or educators or something of that sort. Large salaries go to the chief executive officers of large corporations. The world tends to reward ability. The world tends to reward results. The world rewards the things the world values. Even when corrupted by favoritism, the rewards are still results-oriented. If you're loyal to those in power, you will typically be rewarded. Contrast this with God's system of reward. All right, God certainly cares about results, but results are not under our control. It's part of what Ecclesiastes was about, that the race doesn't always go to the swift or the battle to the strong. In fact, we must leave results in God's hands. God certainly cares about loyalty, but this is a loyalty to who God truly is, to God as he really is. It's not a loyalty against truth. Remember God's rebuke to Job's friends. Job's friends were trying to defend God. They heard Job saying things that were in favor of God, and so they attacked him and tried to defend God. But Job 42:7-9, if the Lord had said these things to Job, he rebukes Job for his speaking foolishly and that sort of thing. He said to Eliphaz the Temanite, one of Job's friends, I am angry with you and your two friends, because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. So Job had said some things that didn't sound too good about God, and yet God basically says he has in some sense spoken of me what is right, and the friends, who never say anything antagonistic to God, God says they've not spoken of me what is right. So now take seven bulls and seven rams and go to my servant Job and sacrifice a burnt offering for yourselves. My servant Job will pray for you, and I will accept his prayer and not deal with you according to your folly. You have not spoken to me what is right, as my servant Job has. So Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite did what the Lord told them, and the Lord accepted Job's prayer. God's way is faithfulness-oriented. Notice what Jesus says in Luke 16, verses 10 and following. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? If you've not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? God's way of reward also is deceited. Busyness is not everything. We are not just to be busy, although without vigor, we're not faithful. 1 Corinthians 15:58, Paul says, therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. And Solomon in Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, what if your hand shines to do? Do it with all your might. For in the grave where you're going, there's neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom. And in Ecclesiastes 11:6, Solomon says, sow your seed in the morning, and at evening do not let your hands be idle. For you do not know whether which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well. So we are to be busy, but we're not just to be busy. If we're faithful, we will be busy. God rewards what he cares about. Matthew 6:33, Jesus says to his disciples, seek first his kingdom, God's kingdom, and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. All these things of food and clothing and shelter and such, God will provide those. You make your priority God's kingdom and God's righteousness. Matthew 25, verses 37 through 40. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or when did we see a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. So we see something of seeking God's kingdom, and his righteousness also involves a concern for people who are in need. God's reward is independent of our abilities. Luke 21, verses 1 through 4. Jesus is in the temple. As he looked up, Jesus saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. I tell you the truth, he said. This poor widow has put in more than all the others. All these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she out of her poverty put in all she had to live on. So basically what we're seeing there is that God's reward is measured in terms of how we use what we've got. Huh? See also Matthew 25, 14 through 30, where the one with the two talents, remember one guy was entrusted with five talents of silver, that's a lot of money. One was entrusted with two talents, and one was entrusted with one talent. A talent somewhere in the range of 60 to 75 pounds, so that times two or five silver. In Matthew 25:14-30, the one with the two talents who doubled them was rewarded equally with the one with five talents who doubled them. So God's system of reward, God cares about results. God cares about loyalty. God rewards faithfulness. God wants us to labor vigorously. God rewards what he cares about. God's reward is independent of our abilities. There are dangers of miscalculation in thinking about reward from God. Basically, these dangers are due to using the world system of reward. If we have few gifts, we're tempted not to use them because we say, well, how can I compete with someone who has got more gifts than I've got? But remember, in that parable of the talents, the fellow with one talent is pictured there as having gone away and hidden that talent and not used what he had. And that's a serious mistake, as we can see with the response of the landowner when his servant hasn't done anything with it, huh? And if we have many gifts, we're tempted to coast. But that's foolish, too, because pride goes before a fall, as we've seen in Proverbs 11:2 in various places. And Jesus says in Luke 18, the first will be last and the last first, etc. If we have many gifts, we're tempted to coast, but God knows what gifts we've got. And he's looking at how we've used what we've got, not what results we've gotten with lots of gifts compared with what results some other people have gotten with many fewer gifts. God takes all that into account. Motivation is central. We shouldn't try to bargain with God or outsmart God. Remember Matthew 20, the parable of the day laborers, how the one group bargained with God, and the picture is the landowner in the parable, and work all day and get what they bargained for at the end of the day. But they're also very dissatisfied because the landowner shows mercy to the ones who have worked shorter times and gives them a day's wage as well, even though they haven't worked all day. We should not be bargaining with God. We can do nothing without love. Remember what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13:1 and following. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I'm nothing. I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Effort, orthodoxy, gifts, etc., are no replacement for love. Motivation is central. Conclusions. What does the Lord require? Well, in Micah 6:8, the prophet tells us the Lord requires us to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. Who will be blessed? Jesus gives us a list of those who will be blessed in his Beatitudes at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. Those who are poor in spirit, those who are mourners, those who are gentle, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, those who are merciful, those who are pure in heart, those who are peacemakers, those who are persecuted for Jesus' sake, persecuted for doing what is right. Those are the ones who will be blessed. So, that's the end of this quick tour. Let us be faithful and let God take care of the reward.